And welcome back to the Film Reel cast. For a change, it's a Tuesday. I just said it's Wednesday. Don't that makes a blind bit of difference? But we are recording the podcast on a different day, which means the vibe could be a bit different. But the energy will be there because the film we're doing is amazing. But we won't reveal that yet. I just want to say Steve is back on the podcast. We paid the ransom. He is here. Steve, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks, and I'm really glad that you paid that $7.49. Really needed
It's not a problem,
it.
mate. It's not a problem. Are you walking all right now, or is it still tough?
The doctor said it's going to be a while, but we'll get there. Small steps, quite literally.
Well, I love the sound of wind chimes when it blows near you, mate. So hopefully it won't be that noisy for too long.
Nah, I'll just put a cork in it or something. We'll get by.
Hopefully, in a couple of weeks, it will get down to the size where you can put a cork in
Yeah, it's not there yet.
it. And obviously, we have Neil back. How are you doing, mate?
I'm good, mate. Good. Please, Steve's back.
We have Countdown Kelly back on the pod. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Oh, it's such a shame that I've just had to play the countdown music because you take so long to answer. But that's tradition.
You just choose to cut me off.
That's very true. And there's edit number one that I've had to put in. Thank you very much for
You are very welcome.
that. I appreciate that. So, this week, in true style, that we do terrific film week after week, and we keep putting these belters out. Top Gun, Top Gun Maverick. I'm going to say it against the grain. John Wick 4. And we did Under Siege, and it got a kind of a mixed review. Beast, like, you won't be surprised to know that Kelly's not actually seen Under Siege, the first one, but we're doing Under Siege 2, Dark Territory. And I don't know why they call it Dark Territory. They mention it in the film enough and look at the camera to break that fourth wall for the audience. But 1995, Dark Territory. You won't be surprised to know that this film is just about to come off Amazon Prime. I am shocked by that after viewing it several times. Are you guys?
No.
Shocked it's coming off, shocked it was ever made or ever
Oh, I'm not
greenlit.
shocked it was ever made. I'm just shocked that you could watch it for free. I thought it'd be one of those films you'd have to pay for, because why would you ever want to watch it?
But it's strange. There is a pay-for version and there is a
I
free
know.
version when you get Amazon Prime. Why do they do that? I never get
Oh,
that.
for thickies that don't look at things properly.
That's true. I've only rented it 3 times this week. So it's I've done pretty well. So, and Kelly, you said you've not seen Under Siege, which obviously that doesn't surprise anyone on planet Earth. Do you think, like, I know you're going to hate this film anyway. But possibly would have enjoyed it more. Did you think you lost the story? Because Under Siege 1 is a very good film, to be fair. Going into number 2, you've heard the hype. What was going through your mind? The adrenaline rush and everything.
Absolutely nothing, though. I don't think I've missed out. I think I've saved myself probably an hour and a half of not losing my life for that period of time by not watching Under Siege. So I'm okay with that.
Well, I would say you're wrong because you're missing an incredible pair of boobies jumping out of a cake. So, egg on your face.
No, still no. Funny enough, I'm not really drawn to a film because of boobs. I can just look in the mirror.
If you want to see a right tit, yeah, you do look at yourself. That is completely true.
Very good. Well done.
But we
Well
established
done.
myself and Neil when we did the, I think it was it Fall or was it the conference that I think it might have been conference that if a film does show some kind of boobage, it will guaranteed on the film reel cast to gain an extra point, won't it?
It will, and the opening to this film is epic.
Yeah, so if it gets one at the end of it, I kind of know what the actual score is. I mean, Steve,
Yes.
that ethos that we've kind of adopted on the film reel cast, are you a believer in that? Or, I mean, you're quite a mature man, you're into your music and you're quite in touch with yourself. I know you touch yourself, but do you follow that ethos?
Well, in the 2 months I haven't been on the pod, I've been going to the gym a lot and I've grown my own chesticles now. So I think, yeah, chesticles, breasticles, anything where nipple is showing is great. So yeah,
So you hit
I
the
think it
gym.
works. Yeah, I've been going to the gymnasium and
Do you look like
coming
Terry
up.
Crews now?
The resemblance is uncanny.
I can only imagine, my friend. I look forward to seeing you. Make sure you wear something tight. I will send you a text message.
Or nothing at all.
Even better, even better. I just didn't want to presume, that was all. Did not want to presume. Under Siege 2, I think this is the film that came with great hype. I've looked at the interviews, and obviously I go kind of over the top. I did send some homework, which was terrible. And I
Yes, it
admit
was.
that it was the train crash, wasn't it, Neil?
It was just a train.
Yeah.
It was just a train. I watched it for about 5 minutes. I'm like, why am I watching a train go back and forth on a track? This isn't
Yeah.
homework. This is just being a nerd. I was
Yeah,
just.
to be fair, I sent that out. I didn't actually watch it before I said, everyone look at this, because I honestly didn't know what it was like. But yeah.
It was pointless.
So normally I do a synopsis on the film before we start, but this is basically the first Under Siege, but on a train. That is literally it. Instead of Tomahawk missiles, it's a satellite that's been under control. Steve Seagal, instead of Eric Galifianakis, he's got Morris Chestnut as his sidekick. And that's it, really. There is no massive differences there. They've stuck to what they know best, haven't they?
Action.
Action and cheesy one-liners. That's what
Yes.
they do best. When I go through the facts, I mean, I love going through IMDb. A lot of it is obviously nonsense, but some of the things on there that did make me laugh, and you kind of read things and you think, like, that's bollocks, that's bollocks. This is probably true. And according to Jenny McCarthy Wahlberg, she auditioned for the role of Kelly for Steven Seagal. She claimed during the audition that Steven Seagal ordered her to strip naked after he found out that she had been a Playboy Playmate of the Year, even though the role did not require nudity. And I just say, everyone in the room say yes if they think that is true. Yes.
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 I might have to put a countdown clock on for that, Kels. Sorry about that. It was a bit delayed.
I just not bother talking and you just fill my silences with the countdown
It's
clock?
difficult when we're doing an audio podcast not to talk. It kind of kills the vibe, you know? Just keep that energy up. You're doing really well. Just stay positive. Shoulders
Okay.
back, chin up, you know? All of them. It's
Well,
absolutely massive. So the scene,
it's
the scene of the destroyed industrial facility in China. Recycles unused footage from On Deadly Ground, another Steven Seagal film. Do you think that he got extra credit for that and got paid extra money when he said, actually, I know a film that we could use that from, and that they used some recycled footage? I mean, that's cheating. That's just cheap, isn't it? And lazy.
I think you can say that about this film from start to finish, though, can't
I think you could do. I think you could. And he says during the production, Steven Seagal was wearing a girdle to contain his stomach because he had put on excess weight and he didn't do any of the training regime that they actually asked him to do. I can well believe that because he
Oh,
thinks he's so fucking cool that he doesn't need to do it, does he?
Oh, completely. I reckon he could. Or
Yeah.
he did do, definitely.
The man's an idiot. And this really kind of intrigued me. The producer, John Peters, drew in previous action stars he wanted to return. So he discovered that Peters had hired Gary Busey to play the villain. Busey famously played one of the villains in the first film, who was dispatched via an explosion, the Tomahawk missile on a submarine. The matters got worse when it was discovered that Busey had a pay or play deal, which he meant that whether he was in the film or not, which he wasn't because he died in the first one, he got paid $750,000
What?
because the producer got him signed up to a contract.
Oh, that is some good negotiation, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is some top draw negotiation.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Well done.
Can you imagine? The budget of this was 60 million, and nearly like a million of that went on someone who never actually was in the film because he died in the first one.
That's
It's.
fucking, oh, that's amazing. That is
Yeah.
actually amazing.
It's fucking absolutely brilliant. But it's Steve, had you seen this film before we did the podcast?
No, so I only watched it for the first time today and I had a nap halfway through.
Bless you. Bless you. That's adrenaline, was it?
No. Just too much action. I needed to sit down for a bit.
It was Seagal's acting, wasn't it? You were just so taken
I can't
over
keep
by.
up.
Yeah, he's so good. He's just so quick and so.
He's not quick. He never moves more than 4 mile an hour, does he? Everything he does
Oh,
is so slow, apart from when he waves his arms in your face to disorientate
that's true.
you.
And it is
Yeah, we'll
the
get on
sped
to
up
the end of
bits
the
of Rune now,
scene.
isn't it? Are they?
Or
I
the end
love
of the film.
the bit when he's in a fight and suddenly it goes really fast as if someone in the house has sat on like the remote control for fast forward. It's like, what's happening?
There's the two bits in this film. There's the end where he's running through the train,
Oh my God.
which is some of the worst things I've ever seen. And the hands in they're brilliant.
You know, I re-watched the end of this tonight because it was so bad. I thought, surely I don't remember it being this bad. And I re-watched it again and thought, fuck, that's amazing. It's so good. It's funny. But I mean, this film, there's not a lot to talk about, really. But there are some good stars in it. Some people you think, wow, I know him. I know that face. And some of them are just goons. They must have agents. They're doing a film, a heist film or a hostage film, and they need someone ugly, and you're the custom token gesture ugly person. So Peter Green will definitely get a call. Who's in The Mask? Who's in Pulp Fiction? Everett McGill, who's the main goon, he's always a baddie. He always is. And again, when you get the typical stereotypical people who are like military. And I just love, I mean, when you go back to RoboCop, Kurtwood Smith plays Clarence Boddicker in RoboCop. I can't remember if he's in the first one, but I love his screen presence. I think he's so good. I really do. I wanted him just to say, "Can you fly, Bobby?" Because it's just a fucking classic line, honestly.
Can you fly, Bobby?
Clarence, no! Hit it! I can't ever see him not as Clarence, though. As soon as he walks in, it's like, oh, shit's gonna go down. Oh, he's not Clarence.
It's brilliant, isn't it? It's so good. Yeah, there's so many good one-liners. But we see at the start of this where they're patting each other on the back, and they've got the Grazer One satellite, which has been dispatched, which is a fantastic satellite. Which, if you don't know it's there, you'll never know it exists, and you can't control it because it's uncontrollable. It's just so high tech. And from space, as we see at the start, it gets our first point, our positive point, when they do a
Does.
close-up of a young lady on a beach and they show her boobies. And I'm pretty confident in a military establishment when they've got a probably $1 billion satellite, that they'd be encouraging a close up on a woman's breasts on the beach.
Certainly would if I were there. To be
Yeah.
fair, I did text you as soon as I saw this, didn't I? And say you'll love the beginning, and I thought of you and your hobbies.
Yes, you did. And I was driving the ambulance on a grade one with an injured person in the back. And I actually did stop and pull over to check out what you meant because I knew exactly what you meant. So, and you didn't let me down. It was absolutely incredible. Technology-wise, it was fascinating, Kel, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks for that input.
No,
Amazing.
it really wasn't fascinating in any way, shape, or form. No.
Why is that? Did you not find the
The.
technology that they could, from space, do what they're doing?
Well, it's just very unrealistic. So, no.
Oh.
Okay, fair enough. You know, this is like an audio podcast, so you need to be descriptive because people can't see expressions and kind of signs written down.
I'm fairly sure that people can tell from the way I'm talking about it that it's such an amazing film and that I've really enjoyed watching it and can't get enough and will watch it again and again. Is
You're
that
sending out mixed messages.
Right.
No, but I know where you're coming from. I was really surprised that you got Captain Linda Gilder, who's quite an attractive woman. When I first watched this, because they kept focusing on her and she was giving some weird kind of longing looks that she was like a double agent. Did when you first watched it, did either of you get that vibe at all?
I did, yeah, I have to say. She looked dodgy.
She did, just because she's so attractive, isn't she? Did you get that, Steve?
I was still trying to get over the fact that they had used a multi-million-pound orbital laser to look at a woman's titties.
And you've got Pornhub stuff like that. You can just look at it on your phone. Yeah.
1995, they didn't. I
That's
was only
true.
three. I didn't know what porn was.
Oh, do we have to go down the age thing again? Because it's just, I get killed every single time.
I was going to say, I bet you were born around this time, and I wasn't far wrong.
No, 3 years.
Yourself, Neil.
Shut
How
up.
old? Go on.
I was born in 81.
You were born in 81. Damn, being
So
my maths being so poor.
I would have been
14.
14, mate.
What about yourself? Countdown.
was 8.
You're an 8. I was 21. Fantastic. Excellent. But that's not important. What is important is the fact
other
that...
agents.
Exactly. Thank you very much. Back on track. But we do get another returning character from the first one, and it's Tom Breaker. Tom Breaker, I'm surprised he's still got a job, because he hired Tommy Lee Jones, and it backfired. And due to him, the Indianapolis got taken over. Surely he would have got the sack of all the lives that were put at risk and the people who died because of him. I was shocked to see him back.
Mate, your knowledge of the first film is far superior to mine.
I wish that as a compliment. I feel quite embarrassed, to be honest.
Yeah, I'd love to interject and go, yeah, oh, wow, I couldn't believe it. But I had no fucking idea. So
that's no problems. But yeah, I was surprised he's back. But I did think that she was a double agent and that would kind of come into play. But we're soon joined by our hero, the C-class Tom Cruise. That's what he is. And that's just being really, really kind. Steve Seagal, he's still a chef and he's in a restaurant and everyone fucking loves him. And we learn that sadly his family's died. And left over is Catherine Heigl, who's Sarah Ryback, who's his niece. And she looks so young. I mean, I used to watch Grey's Anatomy and she was in that. And that's where she kind of blossomed and got loads of leading roles.
I've never seen Grey's Anatomy, so...
I have. It's fucking dire, mate.
How's
it? Oh, it's great. It's really, really good, honestly. I love it. Hell, I know. That's stupid. What am I doing? What am I doing? I'll do a token gesture anyway. Hell, have you seen Grey's Anatomy?
No, I have not.
Fantastic.
But you knew that.
I just want to give you the opportunity. I don't want to single you out as being the only person who doesn't watch TV or films but comes on a film podcast. That's not fair.
I've said this to you a number of times. I don't quite understand why you want my input on some of these things, as I generally don't watch films. But hey, you seem to like my input for some reason.
Don't go there. Let's just not go there, because you're going to twist things. You know the way things work. So let's just avoid that.
How is that twisting anything?
So Seagal goes to the train station, Grand Union Station, to meet his daughter. And he must have really enjoyed this part, because it allows him to walk around the station to look at young, attractive women to try and identify his daughter. And I bet in the auditions, just through this, he must have been... I think I need to see them topless to help me identify them. You can imagine any angle, because he's such a fucking sleaze, can't you? Can my daughter be a Playboy bunny with her tits out, or my nephew, or my niece, whoever
niece,
it is?
Yeah, let's change that a little bit. Slightly less creepy. Still really bad. Still really bad, but slightly better.
But you can imagine. I mean, I wanted his niece to be 20 stone, real greasy hair, have a limp, or just be on crutches due to some ailment. But it turns out that she's quite an attractive young 18-year-old who knows a bit of kind of combat and can like just have a conversation. And she's quite bright. It's just so tropey, isn't it?
Well, she was trained by his brother, wasn't she?
So... And we don't really get much of a backstory about her brother. We know he died. And she's got the military cross around her neck. But I take it that, what, was he kind of more dangerous than Steven Seagal? Because he reverts to the fact that he was involved in real shady things. But unless I missed it, because the storyline is quite complicated, but we don't really learn what he was involved in, do we?
No, but that would take the presence away from Steven Seagal.
That's really true.
This is about Steven Seagal.
Everything's life is about Steven Seagal, to be honest.
It's about him and his hair and his one tone throughout the whole film.
I probably asked this when we did Under Siege, but do you watch, are you familiar, you guys, with Steven Seagal films, like the early films?
Yes and no, in the sense of I know that he's done loads and they're all generally the same, but I couldn't name many of them.
I think I know him more just as an actor, as opposed to what he's actually done.
And Kelly, what do you think I'm going to say?
I can tell you, no, I've never seen him in any other films or know any other films that he's been in, but I do know of him.
Yeah,
I know him more for his martial arts, because he is a black belt, isn't he?
He
does quite a lot of like videos about it of him basically just flipping people over with one finger or with like his breath or something like that.
Yeah, he thinks about it.
Yeah, he just yeah, and they just fall over. It's yeah. You know, bullshito, isn't it? They call it something.
It's like Austin Powers when Michael Caine just turns around and says, "Go on, just fall on the floor. You're not even
exactly.
wearing a name badge. Go on." And the two goons just fall down,
yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, I think that is exactly it.
Yeah, it's so good. And I feel that we meet kind of, is he a bus boy? What do they call him? Bobby Zacks, played by Morris Chestnut.
He's a porter.
A porter. Thanks, Steve. Thanks very much. I think he's really underplayed. I mean, I know he must have seen this as his big break. I mean, Under Siege 2, Steven Seagal's in it. It's going to be a really, really big film. And it's, say the budget of this film was $60 million. It made $104, so it did make a profit, a very good one. But in Boys in the Hood, he's really good. I know that's a completely different film, written really well, with a really strong, tight cast led by Lawrence Fishburne. He's underplayed in this. He's undersold. Do you not think, guys?
He was in that. Bloody hell, I didn't realise Boys in the Hood was before this.
Yeah.
So this feels like a real step down.
I know. That's what I mean. From the role he had there, really intense. He really was effective. Here, he plays the tropey kind of just porter who is useless, who's easily led, and some of the awful one-liners when he's told to go through the bags trying to find a weapon. And even though there's hostages on there and his life's at stake, he says, "Well, do you know I'll get sacked if I go through customers' bags?"
No,
it's just, I mean, it's awful. I just think he wasn't given a strong enough lead, possibly because no one can be when they're in a Steve Seagal film, could they?
Hey, what's up?
What's in there?
It's top secret train security. I can't let you get in there.
Come on, what's in there?
No, come on now. Don't make me restrain you because I've been doing a little working out. You see my chest and it'd be real easy to do that.
Mm-hmm, okay. Restrain me.
You want me to restrain?
Yeah.
All right, if you say so, it's going to be real easy. Whoa. You know what? Oh! Okay. There's a mop. And a broom and a whole bunch of smelly stuff you don't want nothing to do with.
I suppose when you're a young actor, though, and you're starting out, you'd pretty much take anything, don't you? To a certain degree. And maybe you thought...
Do you want to make a confession? Because you used to want to be an actor, Neil.
Me?
Yeah. You say you pretty much take any role. Is there some kind of roles that you regret taking then?
Not that I'm willing to discuss.
Excellent stuff. I'll look on your IMDb to see what's on there.
You don't know my stage name. Thank you.
Raging Bull.
Giving him way too much credit.
That's unnecessary.
Here now.
That really was.
Right. Gloves are off.
Yeah, definitely. I don't blame
you.
I haven't actually been horrible. I think it's Stu's basically the one that's been mugging you off the entire podcast. And then
well,
I get
it changes. Suddenly I get thrown under the bus.
I'm protecting myself.
And I was really disappointed when you see you've got Captain Linda Gilder and you've got Captain David Triller on the train and they meet. And strangely enough, they're on the same train as Travis Dane is, who was they used to work with, who was invented Gray's One, the satellite, but they were then deemed a madman and they got rid of him and they believed that he was dead. All these coincidences that all of these people, including Casey Ryback, Steve Seagal, in the same place at once. And if you're going to have these in it, who don't really play a role apart from giving them the codes, why not just get your boobs out? You know?
Yeah, I was hoping for the second pair of boobs.
If this film needs it, it really, really needs it. It's like oxygen. It needs it to survive this film.
Yeah. I don't think it's a coincidence, though, about them being on the train, because he obviously needs the codes. I think it was all planned, wasn't it?
Do you?
Yeah. Otherwise, that is a bit too convenient, isn't it? Oh, we need the codes. Shit. Oh, well, how are we going to get them? They had to get them somehow, so it must have been planned. Otherwise, that's really fucking weak.
You know, it's this film. You just don't know. I mean, Carol, what did you think?
I thought it was planned because they knew who they were looking for when they went through the cabins. So I don't think it was a coincidence.
We soon see our goons who go and steal a couple of helicopters, and it's amazing how easy people can walk onto a military complex and steal a couple of helicopters, some jeeps, weapons, and stuff like that. It's just so easy and convenient. And one thing I was surprised at, and I was a bit disappointed, when you see, funnily enough, Kelly the barmaid, played by Sandra Taylor, I thought she was going to have a bigger role because she's extremely attractive. And you think, is there going to be some romance? Is she possibly going to take over from the Erica Eleniak role from the first one? And all she did was get shot. She offered nothing again. And I was surprised, and I got to admit, a little bit disappointed. I'll go to Kelly.
What, why were you disappointed? Because she didn't get her boobs out?
Whoa, no. No, nothing to do with that. Because she had more screen presence than Morris Chestnut. There was more of a connection there. I know they would have been reverting back to Under Siege with a male and female, and they've kind of gone against type. I think it would have worked better with her. I just thought she had more to offer.
I mean, I don't know. I think he didn't have much of a role, but I thought he had quite a good, stupid side to him, which made, I guess he had some cheesy one-liners, but, I mean, at least he had some kind of charisma.
Yeah, I just feel he was given lines that made Steven Seagal look better.
Yeah, I think that was his role in the film, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, I just think he was like the class clown, and it's just annoying because he didn't offer anything. If you're the class clown, but you've got something about you, you've got some charisma about you, then brilliant, and there's some stakes there, and you're invested whether he's alive or dead. But to be honest, halfway through the film, if he would have got slung off the train over a bridge, I really wouldn't have cared. Whereas, I was going to say Erica Eleniak, but I wouldn't have minded if she would have died. It just would have been nice to have a strong character, a strong sidekick. But again, you've got people like Vin Diesel, who isn't ever allowed to lose a fight. He's never allowed to have his face cut in any fight or show any blood just because of their egos. And I should imagine Seagal brings the same kind of, I don't know, same ego, doesn't he, to his films.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's the thing. I think a lot of them, though, these type of people, they were like that, and they still are, obviously, with Vin Diesel, aren't they?
Yeah.
They just want to be the big macho, can't lose, and stuff like that. And he carried a lot of weight, and I don't mean round his waist at this time in his career.
Yeah, he could do. And he was, I think this was the last knockings of him actually looking good. Because you've got, oh, is it Hard to Kill, Out for Justice, Nico. There is three films that he was just kick-ass in. Really, really good. Mark for Death with the Yardies as well. So that's four films where he was great. And he was kind of looking similar to that same weight, fighting at the same weight, and he looked good. But and after this, because he's bombed so much and he became a bit of a caricature of himself, it just, his career just died and it was just shit. But when he's in the carriage, he is a chef, as we know from the first one. When he's trying to tell the actual chefs on the train of how to mix because the train's rocking and everyone's gathering around him, it's just shit. It's not needed. It's just another case of, look how smart I am. I can even teach these people how to cook. And it's a fucking joke. I mean, Steve, down the gym, are you showing people how to bench press? I should imagine you are. Your Terry Crews physique you've got now.
Probably not. I dropped a 5 kilogram plate on my big toe today and I've been walking with a limp.
Amazing. Oh my God.
Amazing. I don't know quite what to say about that.
I can just see you doing that Peter Griffin thing in the gym.
Yeah, no, very much. It was throbbing for so long and it's getting bruised and so no, I'm not like the go-to guy in the gym.
No, I didn't know you had that story. I feel kind of bad now.
Yeah, it's been a rough day.
it sounds it, mate. But we do get out. I am sympathetic, obviously. I'm laughing because it's kind of laughing in support. That's what it is. So uh-huh. We all support you a lot on the podcast. But our goons soon stop the train. And then we get Jonathan Banks, who plays Scotty, the mercenary, who was the number two in Beverly Hills Cop 2. He was the goon there for Victor Maitland. I didn't know if anyone recognised him.
No.
Okie dokie, just my sad knowledge. I wish I knew like sensible, normal things that would help me in life as much as I know shit like this. I probably would have a good job, you know?
Well, there's always pub quizzes, mate.
Oh, I need a social life. I need a team. That's just real. That's made me even more depressed, mate, you saying
oh,
shit.
Oh, sorry.
Like
well, I was going to say we should form a team. We'd always win that sort of basket of crap.
We'd get wankered and that would be it.
Sounds like a perfect evening.
We wouldn't enter. We'd be going for fucking 5 years and nothing would happen. So never mind. But the train does get stopped and both the drivers killed. And yeah, we do see, I just love, if you need a goon, if you need someone who's an evil killer who is just no fucks given when he shoots people, and he does it in a really good way. He's the guy with the like revolver, the automatic handgun. He's just brilliant. And yeah, Beverly Hills Cop 2, you will have that, oh yeah, moment, and you recognise him. Uh-huh. But they take over the train. And I was thinking when this was happening that surely Steven Seagal would want to know whilst the train stopped. And he is responsible for all of the chefs getting executed, isn't he?
I guess he is, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he fucking takes one person out, picks him out of the carriage where they all of the chefs are. And because they think the chefs are responsible, they all line up and they execute all of them. And
to be fair,
down to him.
He does say get down and they don't listen.
Maybe they thought about music. Get down.
Maybe, yeah. Blow about to just get into dance and then got shot. There's a calamity of errors there, isn't there? That's it, yeah. You know.
Exactly. Communication errors is absolutely brilliant. And then we're introduced to our baddie, Travis Dane, who has the tightest. I reckon you could baseball bat him on the head and he wouldn't even feel it because his perm is amazingly tight. It's such a quality haircut, isn't it?
Is that what your hair was like when you had it?
Oh, wow. No, it wasn't, to be fair. I never had hair. I was born with no hair and I've had no hair.
Anyone think that he's so overacting this?
Oh, he goes for it, doesn't he? This is the biggest role of his life. He's fucking there. He wants an Oscar.
It's bad.
Eye contact with the camera. He looks at the camera so much. And when I first noticed it, when I watched his film for a second time, he's like in the film on his own. It's as if there's no one else there. And it's just like a POV kind of film of just him. Because he's just a shit actor, isn't he?
Yeah.
What else has he been in?
Do you know, I didn't even bother looking with him. He's been in lots of different things, but I just really wasn't interested.
Oh, to be fair, known for is one of the films is this film, and other than that, it's Talk Radio, Wonderland, and Uncut Gems.
Wow,
which is his latest one.
Amazing, Uncut Gems. That's not the one with Adam Sandler, is it?
Yeah,
that's a good film.
Yeah.
All right, there you go.
Yeah, so he's been quite a lot.
Yeah,
obviously, but no, I don't recognise him other than this.
We see our two stars getting tortured. And say getting tortured, they kind of both bottle it, considering they've got massive secrets that will change the world, which could destroy the world, that they get, rather than handcuffed to a chair, they're put in kind of these gimp restraints, aren't they? A lot of effort has gone into restraining these. I just noticed that when I watched this. It's, apart from a ball in their mouth, and I mean, and going on to Pulp Fiction, they're trussed up pretty tight, aren't they?
I think that's Travis's secret other side, isn't it?
It is. And I thought this woman who had the, like this hot object they were going to stick in her eye, she really looks like Zoe Saldana. I thought it was her when I had to check, and it clearly wasn't. But she really did remind me of her from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, no, she would never, fucking hell, that's a huge cap. She wouldn't look the same, would she?
No.
She was just very young in 1995.
Yeah, it just kind of reminded, but when they threaten to stick these things in her eye, they both just, I mean, I'd give up secrets. I wouldn't give a shit. It's all self-preservation. But it's funny how these people just break so easy, don't they?
I think I'd break pretty easy if that was going to happen to me, to be honest.
Oh, I wouldn't care. I really, really wouldn't care. Steve, would you just give it up?
No, I'm hard as nails.
Apart from when you drop a weight on your foot.
Yeah, apart from when, yeah, that's a different thing, though, isn't it? That's very like that's a sensitive subject, Stu. You don't have to do that, bring that up again.
If they tied you up and wanted secrets that would launch a satellite and they threaten to drop a weight on your foot, you what would you not give it up, or would you?
To not have to go through the pain again, they can have whatever they want.
The needle point will pass through the lens with very little difficulty. The heat will cauterize and seal the wound. However, the instrument will continue to transfer heat to the fluid in the eyeball. The fluid comes to a boil, and the eyeball itself explodes.
JBN, 1, 2, 1.
I'd love them to tie Kelly to a chair and perm your hair. Give you a Travis Dane perm. Okay, I'll tell you. It'll be so good that you get rescued and you turn up with a massive tight perm and your family are like, what the fuck happened to you?
You'd look amazing.
Yeah, of course you would. With a bag on your head, it would look incredible.
Thanks.
That's okay. But our two so-called heroes give up the codes, the launch codes, or to take over Graze One, which is our satellite, and just to a nice thanks that they both get chucked off the train and they both get killed. And I was quite surprised about this, but when I saw it, it kind of made sense, because they're traitors to their country, aren't they? To a certain degree, that's the way they will be seen, for giving up such secrets, wouldn't they?
Maybe not traitors, considering they've been tortured.
Oh, you see some films and people just don't give it up, do they? Like, proud military men will not give it up.
I don't know that makes them a traitor, though. It just means that they were weak-willed.
You are that. You're kind of branded that because you're basically giving codes over to someone who you know can control a satellite that will destroy, cause a world war. They destroy that plant in China. And apparently there's a nuclear reactor, hopefully under the Pentagon, which they're going to wipe out all of Washington with the nuclear fallout. So you take that job and you take the responsibility and you don't give it up no matter what. Surely, under the code of ethics that they'll sign, that they shouldn't give it up. I think it makes them a traitor. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, do you know what? I don't disagree, because it's kind of treasonous, isn't it? What I don't understand is, once they've obviously got the codes, they chuck Matey Boy out first, and as they do it, that random merc, he just starts shooting at the body.
Yeah.
What's the fucking point?
To be fair, someone shot a radio to turn it off. I think they just like shooting shit.
Yeah, that too. It's just, how much ammunition did they bring with them?
Too much, by the looks of it. They actually bought way too much.
Maybe he got told off for bringing too much.
Yeah.
That's too much. So he just thought, fuck it, and shot some.
Just shoot everything, yeah. But we soon get our first demonstration. We learn that Travis Dane has control of the satellite, and that everyone in the control room, Kirkwood Smith, is panicking that we can't get it back, and it's impossible to find because the satellite was built so other countries couldn't find it. And they even call back Tom Breaker, who is just fucking about as good as a chocolate kettle. He really offers nothing. And the highest bids from people, I take it, are picking targets. Like that Travis Dane will stay in control of the satellite, and if people give him so many millions, he'll blow stuff up for them. Was that right?
Yeah, no, I think you are right. It's sort of out for all the terrorists, aren't they? Just to turn around and say, give us all the money you want, you can, and whoever wins the bid, we'll blow something up for you, definitely. Because he's already going to blow up the Pentagon anyway, isn't he, as a revenge for being sacked. So
yes. That's right. And it's very tropey that it's one of those things where they thought someone was dead. And because even Tommy Lee Jones in the first one, they thought that he was dead. And Tom Breaker sent a team of assassins out to kill him. And then he turns up. So it's not very original, the character arc of Travis Dane, that again, he's gone. We don't know where he is. He's probably dead. Oh, no, he's not. He's on a train controlling the satellite that he created all the software for. It is so fucking tropey. And again, I got bored already 33 minutes when you've got Steven Seagal and Morris Chestnut, who he's trying to teach him of the principles of cover and move and how to use a gun. And he's so condescending. Steven Seagal is in his element, Kelly, in this, isn't he?
He is, and he's just a horrible creature. He's not even a nice human.
Why
He's
is that?
just. Because he just comes across as a complete penis. There's nothing nice about his character. He looks like a complete sleaze. Clearly, from the requests he made to the actresses that wanted to do it, he is a complete sleaze, and he doesn't have any way of creating any other persona about him, so he's quite shit at his job as well.
Yeah, he doesn't set himself up as being a nice person. And it's amazing the difference that makes, isn't it? I mean, Keanu Reeves is a bit different because he's a great actor as well, and he's done various roles. But if Steven Seagal was a nicer person, I think that would make a huge difference to you, Steve. That if he came up like in real life, people went, yeah, he's a lovely guy. But that would make a massive difference because there was loads of slander, wasn't there, to follow his career.
Yeah, I just don't. I mean, if you erased everything I know about him, you could consider it, but you would never be able to change my mind. You probably can't change the mind of many others as well. He's always been known for being quite sexually charged whilst on set and with castings, which is obviously we spoke about it earlier. He's a sleazeball, and I think we discussed this when we did the original Under Siege. It's almost like he doesn't have to play a character, he just plays himself and gives it another name. So you never really cheer for him. He's just a massive cock.
Is he like the older version of Jason Statham then?
Yeah, but Jason Statham, like, he's got a history of being, he was an athlete, wasn't he? Like a
He was a
diver or
diver in
something.
the
He was a
Olympics,
diver,
yeah.
yeah.
Whereas, like you said, Neil, Steve Seagal is black belt in bullshitsu.
Yeah.
It's almost like he has created this own story arc for him in real life. Whereas, yeah, Jason Statham plays the same character, but at least he's got a decent wife and a rocking body at his age. Steven Seagal's let himself go and wears a wig. It's
Yeah, and I
just,
think there's a lot
yeah.
more charisma to Statham, isn't there? And he's done films like Lock, Stock, Witch, and Snatch, which are really, really good films. And again, I think it helps massively being in these types of films. And you don't get, unless I'm wrong, any sleaze about Jason Statham either, do you?
No, he seems quite respectable. And I don't know if any of you have ever watched it's that spy movie with Melissa McCartney or
Yeah.
McCarthy, whatever name. And the character he plays in that almost takes the piss out of every character he's been.
Yeah, Spy. It's a really good
Yeah.
film, actually, isn't it?
So
Yeah.
yeah, it takes his character and a bit of a funny twist on it. So yeah, you'd never get that with Steven Seagal. He is too much of a, I am a macho man, and I need tits and guns and shit. He's just, oh, he is a cock, isn't
But we soon learn the sheer power of the Death Star, and that's the wrong film, but they
he?
blow up this Chinese. It's meant to be like a manure factory, but it's a chemical weapons factory that the
Yes.
Americans know and the Chinese know. And it's put pretty well, to be honest, by Travis Dane. A show of force that they blow this up. And I like the fact that, fuck it, let's just blow something up.
Now look, it's demonstration time. I know some of you are having a little trouble with the concept of a non-terrestrially originated seismic event, but I want you to watch China very closely for the next 10 minutes. Now, this is where the shit really starts to fly. A fertilizer plant in Guangzhou.
A fertilizer plant?
Yeah, I'm gonna shock the world by spreading caca all over the place. Guangzhou is a chemical weapons plant masquerading as a fertilizer plant. We know this. The Chinese know that we know. But we make believe that we don't know, and the Chinese make believe that they believe that we don't know, but know that we know. Everybody knows.
And the kill counts, I went through this, and it was really high, just due to the fact that, and it's a massive guess, where it says at least 3,000 unnamed people were blown up when Travis Dane with Grazer One blew up the chemical weapons plant. But it's just so random that someone guessed 3,000 people. But he does at least show a bit of force, and then he says he could take out the Western Seafront. And the only credit I can give this film, and you guys might shoot it down, is that you believe that Danes is insane, and that possibly he would next wipe out the Eastern Seaboard. I kind of figured that. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah, definitely. He'd do whatever he wanted, wouldn't he? He's obviously just mad with power.
And it's a good flex of muscle. I don't know why they went with there's a nuclear reactor. I don't know how true this is. I don't really care. Under the Pentagon, and that he's going to blow that up. And due to that everyone will be killed by nuclear fallout. I mean, I don't know. Do you think there's an element of truth to that being the Pentagon?
I doubt it. But I don't know. I didn't really care about it. I just thought it was a plot driver in the film.
Again, Steve Seagal with his gadgets. In the first one, it was making these bombs and incendiary devices. Here, he's got some kind of old-fashioned PDA, which he linked up to a phone to send a message to his chef mate. And this is where the baddies go down and they start to clear the train of any kind of stragglers. And but before they do that, you do get that, which is quite comical, where someone bids 100 million to have his wife killed who's on a plane.
He wants you to blow up a jet plane going 500 miles an hour with a weapon designed for subterranean strikes. Yeah.
Well, he says he'll pay us an additional $100 million.
Really? Do you have the plane's transponder numbers?
Sending him now.
I can do this. Tell him his ex-wife is history as soon as the money is deposited in our account.
As entertaining as it was, I don't know. I mean, Cal, could a satellite follow a plane with its laser and destroy it? It just doesn't seem feasible.
No, I'm pretty sure that that would not actually be able to happen. But it's quite a comical bit to the film. I did think that was amusing. And it was probably one of the only bits I found amusing. So, 'cause I'm sure there's lots of people out there that would pay that sort of money to have a wife or significant other half.
But yeah, and credit to the film. As you said, Neil, earlier, that Dane's is like going for it. He's fucking giving it his everything. And to his credit, he does do like the insane, like perfectly well, doesn't he? He looks fucking crazy, but he does it well. He wears it.
He does. It's just so over the top for me. And I know he's supposed to be maniacal and a bit fucking deluded and sort of unhinged, but it was just too much for me. It was just so over the top. It sort of, the film isn't believable anyway, but it just made it even more unbelievable.
And Steve, did you get the impression, and I did all the way through this film, that I really want to talk about the one-eyed goon as well in a minute, because he fucking cracked me up. But Marcus Penn, who's like the head goon, that I thought that from the start, from Dot, that he hated Travis Dane, and I don't know what his motivation is. Do you?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be more of a, they would, you know, show more of his backstory and, yeah, what he was getting out of this. Because they're complete opposite ends of the spectrum. You've got Travis Dane, who's a bit of a nerd, to put it nicely. He's obviously twisted. And you've got him at the other end of the spectrum, who's just meant to be the kind of muscle. And obviously, they're not going to get on. But, how did you meet? Did you meet, like, through Facebook or, I don't know, like, Craigslist?
Grindr, Tinder, how was it?
how did you meet, like, did you go for coffee and when did you decide you wanted to kill thousands of people?
Interests, murder, world domination.
you never really know what he's getting out of it. I mean, obviously, it's a shit ton of money. But why is he so angry and upset at the world, you know? Who hurt you?
It's just, there was never a connection between them. He just seemed to tolerate Travis Dane, and it's really weird. But when we get our first goon killed, the one-eyed terrorist, you've got to be pretty desperate. Why would you hire a one-eyed terrorist? I mean, you give him a gun. He's only partially sighted. I mean, he should just be making sandwiches for the other terrorists. That should be about as far as he goes, surely.
Maybe he was at the Nakatomi Plaza, who knows, lost tonight. And they were like, do you know what, we can't sack him.
Well, there's a union in goons and that they can't get rid of him.
Probably, because none of these people, regardless of whether they got two eyes or one eye, none of them used the sight to aim anyway. They would just hold it down by their waist.
Yeah, they just spray bullets everywhere. I'd love to think that there is a family and the kids are like, what's dad doing today? Oh, remember, it's Wednesday. Your dad's taken over that train with all those hostages and he's going to be really busy at work. So he's going to be tired when he gets in. But these goons are just hired like through Reed employment agencies. Just where do they come from? It's so funny. I'd love to find out. They should do a film about that. Like a job agency who just hire people. Who fucking,
that would be good, wouldn't it?
So, yeah, take over trains. It would be so good. But he does get, funnily enough, dispatched. Taken on his blind side pretty quick, And there's not much of a fight. I mean, as they say in Austin Powers, he's not even wearing a name badge. He should have just laid down and just taken the knife, really. But I do like the fact that they do blow up. When I say they, I do mean poor old Kirkwood Smith, that they think they've blown the satellite up. And it's a clever twist that Travis Dane is one step ahead and that he's made them blow a satellite up that later on in the film, when he gets to his next step of his plan, that they will need. And I like that twist. I mean, credit to the story, Kells. It's pretty clever, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say that's probably one of the most ingenious things they put in the film. The rest of it is kind of pointless and has no real meaning. But yeah, it ties in very well, and actually has a bit of a twist to it, which makes it almost believable that he's got a brain and not just mentally insane.
Well, he is a genius. He's just, I don't know, as Neil's like maniacal genius psycho with it. And again, it's weird that when he does his speech, like they do in lots of films, when he comes on the big monitor and he's talking to everyone, that he must have gone to like Happy Snaps and got a large print of the Eiffel Tower, which must have been someone's job to bring along to put behind him in the background. It's so funny. I thought when I saw it, I thought, I wonder if like whose job that was.
Maybe it was the one-eyed goons, and because he did such a good job, they say he can come on the mission.
Yeah, someone said, you know what? I don't think we're giving him a chance. That's it. Yeah, any first job he gets, he fucks up. But fair play, he did bring an actual large print of the Eiffel Tower, so that's absolutely fine. But it's not too far off that Steve Seagal, who's really his job at the moment, well, it's not his job, a stuntman, of him walking up and down the train on the outside. He's not really doing a lot, is he?
Reconnaissance, I guess.
Reconnaissance.
I'm
That's
trying to give it
we're
something.
giving him way too much credit.
It's not him. It's a stuntman, thankfully. This actor at least keeps stuntmen in jobs. I'll give him that much.
Or is that a
Yeah.
dig at Tom Cruise?
If you want to take it that way.
Oh, I am, because I'm quite protective.
Are you? Oh, I didn't realise.
Yeah, I am a little bit. I do hide it well, but isn't it great seeing that geezer get when Steven Seagal to get his kind of comms that he goes down to the front of the train, where 1 minute there's just two people driving it, then the next minute you see another angle, and it's like a fucking football team of goons
Yeah.
standing behind him. I mean, where the fuck did they come from?
Why do they need to be there?
They
What are they
like
expecting to
trains.
happen? Yeah. Oh, that's the other thing. So they've come along and they go, I'll come, but only if I can go in the train.
Only if I can do the
That's it. They're all taking turns.
That's why they're there queuing
That's
up.
it. That is it. Oh, we figured it out. Look at us.
Amazing. But you do get a shootout. That keys gets kicked in front of the train, which I do like. It's quite nice. It's pretty enjoyable. But Ryback is starting to take them out one by one at this time. And he has one of those rounds or the guns that just fire more bullets that are in the actual magazine, which is really clever.
Yeah, I don't know why they got rid of those guns, to be honest. The army would save a fortune, wouldn't they?
But they really, really would do. And I think it's really impressive when you do get the mercenary and she's on the top of the train. All it's got is female mercenary. Her name's Affy. And she shoots Steven Seagal. I mean, you have got to be on a train that's bouncing up and down, and you're sitting on top of it with a sniper rifle, taking a shot from a good few hundred yards away, and she hits Steve Seagal. That's just a shot in a million. It's just fair play to her. And I'm surprised Steve Seagal did not catch that fucking bullet. I expected him to.
It leads on to one of the cheesiest things in this film, though, doesn't it?
Go
Because,
for it.
yes,
Talk
it's an
us through it.
unbelievable shot, but he then goes, he obviously manages to hold on to the train, even though he's been shot with a rifle.
Yeah.
And then he comes back in, and the guy's like, oh, you've been shot. And he goes, you think I've been shot? This isn't being shot. It's like, what the fuck is it then?
Oh shit, man, you've been shot.
No, no bullet. No bullet in here. You think this has been shot? This ain't been shot.
You've been hit with a bullet. That's being shot.
Wanted him to then shoot himself and go, this is being shot.
Or shoot him. Say, this has been shot. You little shit. Fucking tell me I've been shot.
That would have been so funny. He shoots him and thinks, shit, must count out my temper. I really must. But it's then that Al-Baadi, Marcus Penn, soon realises that Steve Seagal has given away where they are, and he sent that fax to his chef friend. And from there, the story gets more and more ridiculous, because the goons are basically held up in the middle of the carriage where all the tech is. And they know, well, the only person who really is sure is Marcus Penn, the main goon, that Steven Seagal is on the train. And no one else really seems to give a fuck, do they? It's only him who's probably vexed out about it. He's just so focused, isn't he? I don't quite understand why. Is it because he's insane, or he's evil, or he's just bored?
I think it's because he knows who he is, and he's the best of the best, and he wants to be the one that puts him down, but he's obviously worried about him because of the fact of his reputation. So I think he's more worried about him than anything else.
He sees him as a threat and ruined their plan.
I bet Steve Seagal loved that. I bet there weren't enough lines in it like that. And he got the person as they were going in the next scene. Can you just mention, like, someone's scared of me again in this next scene?
Yeah, probably did, yeah.
It's yeah, not
it probably
went
enough. To the director. They weren't looking scared enough. Can you reshoot that bit, please?
Exactly. And they soon find Sarah Rybeck, because she's got that, obviously, military cross. And fair play to her. She does try and style it out, saying she's getting a free ride and she works on the train, but it was never going to work.
I'm an employee.
Where's your uniform?
I'm deadheading. Getting a free ride. Home.
Navy Cross.
Mace.
Not a mace, sweetheart. Pepper spray. Sold to civilians. Once you get used to it, just clears the sinuses.
Nah.
And they find the military cross, and that's what gives her away. You get our friend Kelly, the barmaid, Sandra Taylor, that she does the decent thing. Out of everyone, she stands up to the goons, but she gets shot, and we never see her again. Does she die? I really don't know. I'd like to know.
I don't care, but I suspect she's dead.
She did get shot in the knee, though, doesn't she? So she's not likely to die from that.
In the knee? I thought she got shot in the chest, didn't she?
Yeah, I thought she got shot in the stomach.
She falls down and is holding her knee.
Her acting isn't great, is it? This is a big moment as well, you know? She was trying to style it out.
Maybe.
And Steve, you saw Under Siege, the first one. Were you on the pod for that?
Yeah.
Were you surprised that the next scene after that, that Steve Seagal was making a bomb out of a cocktail shaker?
No. So this is what the film needs more of. And I know he probably thinks he's really cool for doing it, but it's a complete fucking shit show. Him thinking he's got any knowledge about explosives is awful.
Yeah, but I believe he thinks he does know it, though, in real life.
That's half the battle, isn't it? Like, believing in yourself. That you cannot doubt Steven Seagal's belief in himself.
You can imagine him, can't you, at like a dinner party and saying, yeah, this one time I built this bomb out of a cocktail shaker. And they're like, what, in a film? I don't do films. Everything's real life.
It's when I saved everyone from a train.
Yeah. Oh,
that's amazing. And the geezer he throws it at is dressed as one of the Ghostbusters, isn't he? He's got that brown outfit on, just walking, minding his own business. And then Steve Seagal just chucks one at him. It's got "your fucks" written on the pager. And the geezer sets fire. And it's a really good stunt, though, isn't it? I love the stunt of people getting set on fire.
He's really unlucky, though, isn't he? Because he threw the, you know, the sort of Molotov at people that were wearing the fire retardant suits.
Yeah. It's unlucky. I wonder what the union said to that.
Well, probably that they were lucky that they put those on that day.
Yeah, but to put him out of his misery, Marcus Penn then shoots the geezer. It's not bulletproof.
That's true. Yeah.
But I like the ploy that Bobby Zacks then goes and steals the disc. And then, overacting again by Travis Dane, this kind of fucking hissy fit he has that the disc has been stolen. It's quite remarkable, isn't it?
Well, this is my other problem with this film, is that surely, if something's that important, you'd bring two.
Yeah, that's true. You would bring a backup, wouldn't you?
You would bring a backup of these really important codes that's going to help you blow up the world.
But they never do. There's only ever one copy of anything that's important in any film.
That's true. But still, it's just...
It is nonsense.
Bad planning.
It is nonsense. And again, when the train now stops and Steve Seagal jumps off, along with Bobby Zaks, Al Poulter, sidekick hero, and Seagal finds himself very similar to Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible 2 when he's climbing that cliff. But the difference is Steve Seagal doesn't need no chalk. He doesn't need no climbing equipment. He wears cowboy boots and he's hanging onto the side of this cliff. And the tension, I mean, we did Fall last week, which is available on The Queue, which was a good film and a really good fun podcast. This brought me back to Fall. I mean, the tension was there, wasn't it, guys?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, no, yeah. I'm right there with you, Stu. Yeah. It's
trying to sell snow to the Eskimos at the end of the day. Yeah. That's all it is. But it is a funny scene because it's just so bad. The special effects in this film, where did that budget of 60 million go? We know 1 million went to Gary Busey nearly. Who was in the film. But the fact that some goon comes down on a rope and Steve Seagal just takes him out with a few single punches. I love these films when he's so strong that single jabs take the guy out. It's just so over the top. And the sound effects for the punches are brilliant. I bet Seagal rev that sound up, didn't he? I just want to do it.
It's very reminiscent of action films of the day, though, wasn't it? Really loud shit punching noises and the fact that if you're the good guy, you can't get shot or hurt and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah. And the next scene, Steve, when Bobby Zaks, Al Poulter, gets cornered by one of the goons, you knew almost as if you were standing on set saying, action, what was going to happen? And you've written a script yourself that you've never used a gun before. We're taking he's never used one because his knowledge of it was very limited. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he gets out of it the way he does and shoots the goon in the heart. Oh my God, my eyes rolled so much, I nearly fainted.
Let me just turn my back quickly. Oh, gun. One shot, dead. Oh my God, I've killed a man.
It's so bad, isn't it? You go through that 3 seconds of guilt that you've actually killed a person. I mean, he shot him in the heart and the guy had a machine gun pointed at him. It was just so fucking tropey. It really, really was. It was ridiculous. And Seagal manages, the train's gone. And how is Steve Seagal going to get back on the train? That was what a big cliffhanger. I thought he was out of the film now, honestly. Or Seagal, they were going to speed it up and he was going to run after the train. They just speed the film up and he'd catch it up like in fucking Superman 1.
I'm surprised he didn't fly.
I would have loved that even more.
Just took off. Seagal away.
It's so good. And the fact that his mate, you've got Ryback's cook, rings up and manages to get through to one of the most top secret rooms in probably the world, where there's a massive red alert going on, and a chef can ring through and pass a message on that's from Steven Seagal from the train.
Is there a Joint Chief of Staff Bates there, please.
This is Admiral Bates speaking.
Sir, I have a fax message for you. It reads, Admiral, a force of armed men, probably numbering above 20, has taken over the Grand Continental passenger train traveling from Denver to L.A.
It's so tropey, isn't it, that Ryback is the hero. I mean, oh my God, they did this in the first one where Ryback calls from that made-up radio. And they're all high-fiving because he's on the train. It's just, they've done it before. It's awful. It didn't work the first time, did it?
Well, the thing is, I suppose if it made money, if it ain't broke, don't fix it sort of thing. But it's lazy, isn't it? It's lazy and bollocks.
Oh, it's, massive lazy writing. And you knew for a fact, once they put those B-2 bombers, that they're going to go and blow up the train. That's what they were going to do in the first one. If they're going to take the Tomahawk missiles, that they were going to blow the boat up. So even the conclusion of this film was exactly the same as the first one. And they kept mentioning dark territory. We're entering dark territory. They kept mentioning that so much. It was unnecessary, wasn't it, Kel?
Yeah, it was ridiculous because they don't need to add that bit. They don't need that extra bit of explanation. It is completely unnecessary, but kind of like the whole film, you don't really need the film because it doesn't add anything to anyone's life, or, you know, it's just taken an hour and a half of my life that I'm never going to get back. So it kind of just runs true with the whole thing, really.
But that's the joy of doing the podcast, isn't it? You experiment, you watch these films that you'd never watched before, and some of them are real nuggets and gems, and some just like fall flat.
I'm under siege. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't understand, and Steve, you might agree or you might not, that when it's only Penn who's sure that Rybeck isn't on the train anymore. And he says that. He says he might be alive, but he's not on the train. But then for some reason, they still decide to keep Sarah Rybeck as insurance. They don't need to do that now, do they?
So maybe they're just planning ahead just in case, because the only person that is going to come back, if anyone, is going to be Rybeck. It's not going to be anyone else. So, you know, they thought he was dead before. He wasn't. They thought he's now off the train. He technically is. But I would just, you know, just a little bit longer, just in case. Collateral, you know.
It's funny because you roll your eyes at that. Well, that was Keeper for Collateral or Keeper for Insurance. And then you've got the car chase where Seagal is racing to try and catch the train. And it's so good because he kind of races down this cliff. And then he jumps out the van just before it is a massive jump. But he's still about 100 metres away from the train. And then the next scene, conveniently, he's not dirty. His hair isn't messed up. And he just jumps on top of the train. And Neil, it's nonsense, isn't it? I was bringing vomit up in my mouth at this point.
Oh, it's just so unbelievable, isn't it? It's just ridiculous. It's so bad. But at the point of this film of being as ridiculous as it's been, you just sort of like, oh, okay, he's done that then. Okay, that's fine. You just sort of have to roll with it, don't you? Because if you didn't, your eyes would just basically be permanently looking at your brain because they've been rolled back that for that long.
You would be. And the tension. Oh my God, the tension. I was on the edge of my seat when Bobby's ex, Morris Chestnut, was in the carriage and he's saying, why am I here? I'm going to die. He believes he's on his own. And then Peter Green from The Mask fame and Pulp Fiction comes in and he's going to kill him. And he's giving him all the chat. And then Steven Seagal just takes him out. And I like the way he puts him on his front and then just pulls his head back and breaks his neck. That's a good death, isn't it? I want more deaths like that.
Bit more extreme, isn't it? Yeah, definitely.
That's what I want. I want people to die in really violent ways because it's got to be entertaining, this film. And considering Steve Seagal, and you said Steve as well, I think everyone said, yeah, we know him for his martial arts. But to a certain degree, apart from when he fights Marcus Penn, there's fuck all martial arts in this film. It's really disappointing. It doesn't offer anything, does it?
No, it doesn't. I think that maybe that's why they made the final fight so intense. You know, so martial arts heavy, just to make up for everything that hadn't previously been in the film.
I mean, Jesus, we've gone from John Wick 4, love it or hate it, the fight scenes are fucking hardcore in it. They're brilliant. Fight scenes are just so good. Yeah, they're exhaustive, but we've gone from that, where the choreography is just second to none, to this, where it's speeded up because Steve Seagal was too fat to train to do what he needed to do, so they had to speed it up. I mean, that's embarrassing when your forte is martial arts, Kel. Not you, obviously, but you've done martial arts, and they have to speed it up. It's lazy. You shouldn't be paid.
It is lazy, and I'm sorry, but what he does, you can't really call that martial arts either. You're kind of insulting the craft, to be fair, because it's just bollocks.
But he does do it. He is like a fucking Fifth Dan master...
He Bruce may Lee well thing. Be, but what he does in the film is, don't you know, it's just shit. It's just a few fancy waves at the camera and in someone's face. That's not really martial art.
I love it, though. I can't wait to get onto it. The knife fight is just one of my favourites. And we learn that Dark Territory is because he can go off kind of radar, and that they go into this little kind of mining village, and from there that he can do what he wants. And that he can't be found. And there's meant to be a tension to a certain degree that they need to make it in time, and they're sending stealths out. And he wipes one of the stealths And that there is zero tension, Steve, in this part, is there? There's nothing whatsoever. As a viewer, you kind of, you've lost already. I don't give a shit by this point.
No, there's no attachment to any characters. So you're not, you're not scared to lose anybody. You're not really rooting for anyone. You just don't, I just didn't care.
No, but it made me laugh that when you've got Bobby Zacks and Steve Seagal walking through kind of the passageways behind the toilets and stuff like that, and they're going to the toilets and there's a woman in there doing her makeup in a hostage situation where there's terrorists, and you say you want to go to the toilet and you're escorted by the terrorist, would you be in the toilet doing your makeup? Is that a priority? It fucking cracked me up that she was doing that. It just, I mean, Kels, would you do it?
No, it wouldn't be my tactic, but maybe she was going to do it to try and turn on the charm to get out or get away or be saved in some way. So maybe she had an ulterior motive.
That's very true. Maybe she did. Maybe she did. And she could have been a ninja herself and been another psychic Steve Seagal, with the fact using her beauty as a weapon. But I doubt it, because the film isn't that deep. But one of the stealths is taken out, and I do like the fact they take him out because of the air turbulence that is broken because they go so low. And it kind of fucks over the military because that's all they've got left. But they've got Steve Seagal, and you get quite a good shootout, and he goes to rescue the terrorist straight away. And there's loads of collateral damage in this that is just quite a shame. Some guy in the military who chose to be a hero gets killed, and there's no fucks given about him, is there?
Not one. He tries to help out, gets fucking murdered, and that's that. No one gives a shit.
And what I want to talk about, because the rest of it really is irrelevant, but mano a mano, David and Goliath, the fight that we want to talk about is Marcus Penn against Steven Seagal, and even Penn says that there's something creepy. Even he's freaked out and he wants that battle. And I love it in a film when you've got these two men. They're more manly than I'll ever be. I'd love an injection of their testosterone just so I could be like them. That they took their guns on the floor and they want to go it. They want to duke it out and they want to do it with weapons. It's brilliant. I was pissing myself laughing. It's so good. Waving their hands around, Steve, like the way they do. It is just, it's like Team America, isn't it?
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's so much like Team America, like watching two puppets get their strings tangled together. It's almost like, it reminds me of that Little Britain character. The guy's like looking to the eyes, looking to the eyes, waving his hands. It's almost like if he hypnotizes Penn enough, he can get the better of him. And then it just goes into that sped up kind of punches, like 100 punches. It's honest. This might be, if you were to rank like top 10 worst, like Watch Mojo for the worst fight in a movie, this might go at number one.
Yeah, oh, it's shocking.
It's got to be up there, isn't there? It's got to be up there. It's bad. It's so bad.
It's sped up. And as you said, that bit where he punches him in the stomach lots of times, to speed that up, it's just shocking. And it's not even a good fight, though, Kells, is it? You want these two going for it, and it's just poor.
It's given that they're both supposedly good at the craft and quite big guys, you'd think that they would be better at doing this. But no, it's just awful. There's no tension. There's no suspense. There's no nothing. It doesn't make you think, oh my god, who's going to do it? It's just, you're laughing at it too much for anything to be believed. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's the shame. And this is what people want to see. You know from the start of this film that at some point this guy is going to go toe-to-toe with Seagal, and this is what you want. This should be what it's about, and you remember this film for their fight. And the fact that this was even piss poor is a shame. And again, if they're going to try and put that as the great kind of, I don't know, hoorah, the end of this where you've got Bobby Zacks, who's now in the helicopter, and he's covering everyone, and the two trains are colliding, and they have that conversation that the train that is going to collide with, that Seagal's on, the other one has got loads of fuel. It's basically a rolling bomb that it's fueled up, and it's a huge train. But when they crash into each other, Oh my, Neil, just talk us through this scene because it's absolutely priceless. I love this.
Oh, it's just so fun, isn't it? Because there is no tension really, because they've already released the hostages and stuff by separating the train and all this. But it's so funny, the model. But then obviously they do collide, and he's still on the train. Seagal's still on it, and he's got to run for his life. And it's just a gentle jog, it's
Yeah.
just this gentle jog through the train where explosions are going on. Oh, I was wetting myself. It's so bad. He couldn't even be able to run.
No, he doesn't care at all,
He
does he?
doesn't care. It's just ridiculous. I was absolutely pissing myself. It was so funny.
Yeah, it's quite a weird kind of jog that he does, and he's so casual whilst the train is just crashing. And even when the carriages, one of them falls down and he could get cut in half, and he's just
Yeah.
so casual the way he jumps through into the other carriage. And his body language is the opposite to what you're seeing on screen, isn't it, Kel?
Yeah, he doesn't play that. I would be absolutely shitting my pants and running as fast and hard as I could to get away from that. But he kind of minces along. He doesn't even run. It's just more of a mince. It's just ridiculous.
I'm just watching it again now. It's so funny. He's just, like you say, it's just a gentle jog, like, ooh, a little mince down the
Yeah.
train as everything's blowing. Oh, it's just so fucking good. It's so bad.
And whilst this is happening, they do show poor old Travis Dane, who's been, he has his laptop. He goes, "You can't stop me now." Steve Seagal just shoots the laptop.
Shooting me won't do any good. ATAC can't get past my ghost satellites, and you can't get past my encrypted program.
You mean to tell me there's no way that I can shut that off?
No way.
Oh my God, it's Steve. Can it get worse than this?
I don't think it can really. I mean, the writing's lazy, isn't it? I think Steven Seagal was involved in a story, but at this point, yeah, it doesn't get worse. I wouldn't know. Actually, it does get worse. It gets so much worse.
When you see Danes laying by the side of the track, superimposed. It's just the way they put him on screen, it doesn't look right at all. He's at a weird angle, half his body's missing, and you kind of think, is he being run over by the train? What's he actually doing? And then all of a sudden, Steve Seagal jumps out the back of the train onto the helicopter on the ladder. Then somehow, fucking Travis Dane's there holding on to him. I mean, what the fuck's that all about?
Oh, it's just
It
so
doesn't.
unbelievable, isn't it? It just doesn't make any sense, and it's complete nonsense. It's so good. It's so bad, it's good.
Yeah, and the
You
special
know that
effects,
thing.
it's brilliant. When, I mean, again, we said it last week when Dan fell off the cliff in Fall. I mean, you got a Gruber fall from the helicopter. The special effects are shockingly bad. It almost becomes superimposed with fire. They kind of
Yeah.
lose him, don't they?
Yeah, the fire just comes up, doesn't it? And then, oh, that's it. He chops his fingers off, doesn't he, by closing the door of the helicopter.
It's amazing. And they escape. But then Steve Seagal is so cool. He gets on the radio and starts giving a commentary and just taking over comms because he knows best. And it's just awful. And I mean, he saved the day, obviously. But thankfully, the film ends there. And I'm kind of like, I don't know, my adrenaline's going. I'm tired by the end of this because it's just the laughter.
Well, yeah, I was about to say laughter more than anything else.
It's absolutely amazing. I mean, Under Siege 2, Kelly, tell us your thoughts, tell us your scores.
It doesn't even make a score, I'm afraid. It's bad. I wouldn't recommend it. There's not really much story to it. It's shocking.
Fair enough. Would you watch the first one?
No, why would I want to waste any more of my life on something like that? I've done John Wick 4. I don't need to waste my time anymore.
Well, don't even talk about this film and John Wick 4 in the same breath. What are you doing?
Well, I'll give it a little bit of credit. John Wick 4 was slightly more enjoyable, but not by much.
Yeah, whatever. Neil.
I love the John Wick bashing. To be fair, I have to agree with Kelly on that. To be honest, it's not worth watching this film. Save yourself. If you want to watch some comedy, literally look up scenes from the film on YouTube and save it. Like, if you want to see the train moment and stuff like that and the speeded up fight, it's worth watching just for the comedy value. But the rest of the film's pointless. It's weak. His acting is just awful. I can't give it a score. It's that bad. And please don't waste your time.
You're not going to give it a one from the start.
I can't, mate. I can't.
Oh my lord.
Oh, actually, there's boobs, isn't there? And I did say that's a one star.
One star. Good stuff, Steve. Boobs. Welcome back to the podcast. Sorry, it's this film, my friend. Talk us through it.
Well, yeah, based on the rules that because there are breasticles at the beginning, it should be a one. But I'm going to knock that down to a zero for two reasons. One, we completely just didn't talk about the satellite and the fact that it looks like a prolapsing asshole.
That is a fair point.
And that I still don't, we're going to get a bit like technical here. I still don't understand how it works. Like, what does it actually shoot? It just shoots like dust. And satellites move at like 7,000 miles an hour, so how can it see tits? But that's neither here nor there. So that's knocked it down. And it's going to get knocked down again because either one of you can answer this. At any point, does the train make any diversion or does it just stay on its route?
No, it does make a diversion when it gets to dark territory.
So it gets to so at that point, there should be a lot more going on with this train and then it should become a whole different movie and it's just no one cares about the train. Like, no one really cares about the train. It's got a destination to get to. It's got things to do, and they just don't care.
If you care more about the train, look at the documentary that Stu sent out because there's lots about the train on that.
Oh God!
Don't do it! Don't do it!
No, even I'd say.
Yeah, I'm going to bring it down to a minus one because I don't think they used the train to its full potential. I think it could have been any vehicle, really, couldn't it? Like, why did it have to be a train?
Yeah, it would have been more enjoyable if it was a ferry or something.
They literally had helicopters. They could have just got the helicopter to dark territory and done all their shit there. Job done.
Yeah, well, don't even do one. You're kind of scuppered, really, because you can't. They've done a boat, so they can't do a ferry. They have to do a train. You can't do a building because Die Hard is like the king of that. And they would have been so naive to do that or so arrogant to think they could do anything as good as what Bruce Willis did. So it's like Speed, isn't it? It's brilliant, original idea. And then they did Speed 2 on a ferry. And it's like, oh man, that's just bad. And Keanu Reeves wouldn't even come back for it. It's just shit. It really is like a B-side. So
surprises me, because he does like a sequel.
But it's just fucking terrible. But yeah, this film, I'm sticking to my guns. I'm going to give it one. Just because of the rule. But it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. But I'm not surprised because Steve Seagal's in it. And after he did his four films that I would always watch and I really like and I do own on Amazon Prime, but I just wouldn't watch any of other films. I think they're terrible. Really, really bad. This film is absolutely shocking. I would not recommend it at all. It's just piss poor. That is it. There is only two films in the franchise, so we don't have to go down to Siege 3. There was going to make one, but it never happened. Thank God. So I think we'll all be too old if it does ever get greenlit. But that's Under Siege 2. I hope you enjoyed listening to that. There is so much more to listen to on our queue, from superheroes to comedies to lots of horror films. So just check it out. It's thank for everyone. Okay, we will be back next week. We don't know what we're going to do, so it'll be a surprise for us as it will for you. But I can promise you it's going to be a film of Kelly's choice. So if you hate it, then it's going to be her fault. Thanks again for your support. It's absolutely fantastic. We really enjoy doing this. Join us next week for more film reviews.
All the movie clips and music used in this podcast are the intellectual property rights of the respective copyright holder and used to only enhance your listening experience. And any infringement caused is unintended. Well, that's it now, and we will see you next week.